Good day, listeners. Welcome to this edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you with us. My name is Jonathan, and we actually have a friend from all the way on the other side of the world. We've got Brendan Boyta with us. So, Brendan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and why don't you tell our listeners where in the world you are actually reaching us today?
From a place called South Africa, right at the bottom of the continent of Africa. And I am about 50 miles from the east coast of South Africa. So we're not far away from Madagascar. And so we're pretty close on the Indian Ocean. We got some pretty good weather. Not as drastic changing as you guys, but good weather.
Yeah, well, I'm super excited to have you on the program because it's not every day that we get some international people onto the program. But the other thing too, is I think our listeners will be appreciative because they'll probably want to just listen to your accent all day long because, you know, over in America, we don't have as interesting accents as you have. So I'm going to set you loose to talk because I really would love for our listeners to be able to just hear your personal story. Just kind of where you have, come from in terms of your own journey of both sexual brokenness and faith, and just kind of give us some background on where you've come from, because eventually we do want to let our listeners know about, you know, kind of where God's called you actually into ministry. So let's start with your story. Where did it all begin for you?
Sure. It began quite early on in my life. I'm one of three children. I'm the middle child, so there's many syndromes that go along with that. my parents got divorced when I was around 6 or 7. We were still very early. Back then, it wasn't a common thing for South African marriages, or it wasn't well known for divorced marriages in and around South Africa. We were still part of that isolation during apartheid, so there was a lot of negative, but some positive that came out of it. So we were very isolated from a lot of the world trends, and I think divorce was one of the world trends that we were well sheltered from for a while. Growing up, though, being part of a divorced family, I was part of the guys who, you know, are put aside. We were the uncommon people, where unfortunately today those coming from broken homes are part of the common. It's the norm, unfortunately, today. I was my sister's 2 years older than me, my brother's 4 years younger than me, and I was around 6 or 7, somewhere around there, when my parents got divorced. So it was hard work for my mom early on, and in those beginning years for us. I think that's kind of where that sort of story started for me. So I grew up for the majority of my life not having a father around. The setting in which my father left didn't really leave us in a great financial position either. So he left us. He was in and around the area for a couple of years. He then took a position in Joburg, pretty much the financial capital of South Africa. He was there for probably about a year or two before he then got some international positions, and he traveled around for a while. Though the times that we saw him between visits, obviously it got less and less. We saw him quite regularly initially when he was still in and around the area with us. But as he moved to Johannesburg and then therefore left the country, those visits became less frequent. I think I saw him irregularly whilst he was around. And then when he went to Joburg, then it was once every couple of months. That kind of also slowed down until he left the country. I can't remember how regularly I saw him until I was about 13, But I do remember that it was very sporadic. So at one point, there was a year or so before I saw him again. After my 13th birthday, I remember seeing him again once when I was, I think it was about 16. No, I lie. I next saw him after I was 21. So by between 13 and 21, there was a big gap when he just, he wasn't around. He was in various countries around the world. But there was a big gap. So we'd have conversations with him over the phone or over email, but we didn't see him around. So that left my mother to try and now look after three kids. And she, when he left, he had unfortunately had started a business with a friend that had gone under, but then he left. And the debt for that hadn't been paid entirely. So the next of kin was sought after, and that was my mother. So she had to then find work that paid. And so she got a job that was better than what she was earning. And as the years went on, so did the children's expenses, which didn't help. So that added to not only the debt she had to pay, but also just the living expenses, which pretty much set the tone for us, because from early on, my sister and myself, we started walking to school and back. So my sister, myself, and my brother, we had walked to school. My brother was in pre-primary, kindergarten, I think, for you guys. He was maybe 5 or 6. So my sister, myself, we would walk my brother, we'd drop him off, and then we'd all go off to the school, which was right across the road. And then we'd all then fetch each other and walk home again. My brother was about 5 or 6. So I was nearly 10, about 10 or 11. And my sister was about 13 or so. So that was our ages. We were walking probably about 2 to 3 Ks. So about a mile or two to school and then back again. And that was purely because my mother needed to get to work, come back. She would come back, she'd make some supper for us, or my sister would make supper. So she'd drop off ingredients for us, and then she'd go off and do another job and come home again generally after we were in bed, or once we were in bed. So that left a dynamic in the house where we pretty much were fending for ourselves. We were left alone really to kind of figure out how to do not only just our own homework and schoolwork, but we also had to figure out how to do interpersonal relationships and that kind of thing. So it wasn't the greatest environment, but it's not for lack of my mother's work.
Yeah. So then when you started kind of hitting these ages where, you know, there's, you know, your body starts changing, you know, the hormones start hitting and all that. What was kind of that transition into puberty like? And then also, at what point in time did pornography get introduced into the mix, or some kind of sexual issue?
Yeah, so I, growing up, I was always kind of one of those early bloomers. So I've got pictures of me next to some friends, and I was like twice their size until I hit high school. Then I stopped growing and everybody else caught up. So I was always one of those. I think I've grown maybe 2 inches since I was in seventh grade. So I was a big boy early on. I think the transition into puberty was very mixed. So I went through a lot of those kind of hormone changes. I think as most teenage boys do. I think I was one of those early guys just before my teens, I started going through some of those changes. What didn't help is that pornography was introduced to me when I was about 8, somewhere between 8 or 9. So before I even hit puberty, I was already into porn, and that I don't think helped.
How were you introduced to pornography? Did somebody give it to you? Did a friend show it to you? Like how were you introduced to it?
Yeah. So it originally was a friend who, actually the first viewing of pornography that I had was actually in the back of somebody's car. And it wasn't long, but it was long enough to get an image. And I think that kind of stuck with me, but the first, prolonged exposure I had was through a friend. And that was, he and I were very close friends. We were at each other's houses alternate weeks. So it was material that was shared amongst us continually, all the time. New material, we'll get new images, magazine cutouts, and share them amongst each other. And that went on for a good few years until the magazines got more hardcore, until internet came out to South Africa. Obviously then your addiction then grows with that.
And initially, I mean, you're a young kid. You've got a family dynamic where your father is not in the home. So you've got sort of, you're being kind of thrust into some early independence in terms of trying to figure out life in many respects. And then you get introduced to pornography at a young age. I mean, how are you even sort of processing all of this emotionally? Like, what did that feel like for you as a kid between like 8 and 11 as you're seeing pornography, as you're, you know, trying to figure out what it's like to be in a family that doesn't have a dad around? How are you managing that emotionally as a little kid?
I think I grew up with a lot of issues around my acceptance of my appearance, as well as just acceptance as a person. I feel like I was always, I was often looking for some sort of approval. As I got older through school, obviously being almost twice the size of most kids, I became quite physically and athletic, and fairly dominant in that sort of regard. I wouldn't say I was an expert in one or two things, but I was very much a jack of all trades. I would do, you know, average to fairly well in just about everything that was physically orientated. The one thing I think I did really well was I did martial arts. I was probably a staple throughout my school career. I think that's with all the sports that I did, with all my classmates and peers, there was always an issue with how I looked and my appearance, an acceptance to be part of a group, and acceptance to be accepted for me. And I think that lingered even past high school. I think that's lingered still. There's still much of that still goes around, I think, still within me. I wouldn't say that was just as a kid. I think that's been a long lasting issue to try and leave.
Yeah. So tell me also about, like, when did faith begin to mix into this? Like, when did you learn about Jesus, or when did you, you know about God, or like, at what point in your life did anything regarding faith come into, you know, your life?
So we often went to church as youngsters. I can't remember when it happened, but at some point we stopped going to church regularly at home. But it was really just going to church on a Sunday, and much more than that I can't recollect. And then at some point we as a family stopped going. When we would visit my grandparents or something like that, we would continue going to church. But I only really got reintroduced again, I suppose, to Christ and the gospel when I switched high school. So when I started off at one high school and I switched to a second, and that second was called Grace College. And it was after having moved to that school that I was really reintroduced not only to the gospel and Christ, but to people who actually lived out their faith as a Christian. And it was my second year at that high school. So I was about midway through high school at that time. I went through a bit of a depression. I was always seen as this kind of the happy face of the household. I was the comedian and the clown, so I kind of took that on as myself to kind of make people happy in the house. And we went through a number of financial kind of heavy spots over my first couple of years in high school. During primary school, I always longed for a relationship, always wanted a girl's relationship with me, and got none of it during primary school. But as soon as I hit high school, then all of a sudden there were a couple of girls who were interested. But I always entered for the wrong reason. There was always a wrong, it was always a lustful reason that I was going into it. And I think that's very pornography orientated from the years worth of looking at pornography and viewing both just graphical pornography as well as then online pornography by that stage. And all the girls that I was going after also then left me for other people or cheated on me, and that just sent me down into a pit a bit more. Financially, we're going through a rough time at home. My mother was working so much that she was, you know, half of her body was starting to go numb from the stress. We had issues with my brother was going through a bit of a rebellious phase. My sister was getting teased at school, and there came a point where I just couldn't take being this happy face anymore. And I remember one Sunday just lying in bed after everybody had gone to bed, and just I was just crying. I just couldn't take anymore. And it took a while, but my mother came through eventually. It felt awkward, but it felt comforting that as a teenager, I needed comfort. And I spent the night with my mom in her bed just cuddling. I just needed comfort. And I eventually took 2 weeks off of school just to try and recover a bit, to try and get back into my normal. And the only people who sought me out, the only people who tried to get hold of me were three teachers and a youth worker, three teachers from school and a youth worker. I wondered why none of my friends got hold of me, why nobody in a small school would not notice that I wasn't there or say, hey, what's going on? But I had three teachers who left school during school hours just to come stop by, have a cup of coffee and just say, how are you doing? You know, like, we're missing you there at school. And that made a big impact that these three teachers went out of their way,
mm-hmm.
found where I lived, came to the house, came and had coffee with me just to say, how are you doing? And it was pointed out to me that these teachers at the school are only employed if they are active Christians in a church. And it made me start thinking, like, why are they different to a normal Christian? And that's when the youth worker started kind of just guiding me along and just showing me that there's a difference between being, calling yourself a Christian and living like Christ. And that started a 2 year process in me becoming a Christian. I had probably a 2-part conversion at that stage.
Mm-hmm. So then when you come to Christ, what does that look like in terms of beginning to sort of reorient your perspective, especially around, you know, the fact that you've got years of exposure to pornography that have really been, you know, shaping your mind, shaping your view of sex and women and relationships and all of that. What did a relationship with Christ do to begin to address the pornography issue?
It actually took a little while before I got to that point. So I was about 16 when I had that first part of that depression stage and first part of my conversion. I think that over the next 2 years, I was mentored by this youth worker into not only just starting to look more into scripture, learn more of scripture, begin to live out more of what I see in scripture, just talk a lot more to Christ. It was over those years, spent time with him and his mentorship, that I started to see, actually, this is what a Christian looks like. This is actually attractive. This is something that I want. And it was a big step for him. He was probably about 6 months married. And at that stage, he just kind of opened his house to me. So I would go to youth with him on a Friday night and then go to his house, stay the night with him on this Friday night until the Saturday morning. He was married for 6 months maybe, and he's already got this young teenager staying at his house. but he did a lot of mentorship and spent a lot of time with me over those years. And my personality started to change. I had a very short fuse in terms of the temper. You just needed to look at me skew and that would trigger me. And so that started to lengthen a bit. I became a lot more concerned about living a different life than the life my father lived with us. I became a lot more concerned about actually being there for my family. I became a lot more concerned about how I treated my family. It was the end of my matricula, my grade 12 year, the last year of high school for us. And it was during that year, I think, when I really started to understand more of Scripture, and I started to accept more of what Christ had done. I then got the opportunity to work as a youth worker straight out of school. Within the first couple of months of that opportunity, it was hugely beneficial for me. I managed to sit and just listen to my pastor and assistant pastor debate discussions and wrestle with Scripture, and I delved into a lot of Scripture. I was going through a basic theological course, and we went through some biblical theology, some practical theology, some systematical theology, and really built my knowledge substantially. I got to ask a huge amount of questions, and one of the things I started doing was started looking at pornography and looking at lust, and I realized that this is something that I shouldn't be doing. This is something that's wrong. I was reading through a book. I think it was probably about 3 months, 4 months into me being this working as a youth worker. This book laid out a challenge between male and authentic manhood, and I thought, like, what's the difference? And they build up this maleness first, and they talk about this guy who's this go-getter, who's this guy who kind of just he goes with what feels great, you know, he goes with his what feels good with him, he pursues what's good and right for him. And I initially was kind of thinking, going, this sounds like an average guy, it sounds like a good guy. Until they dropped the bomb saying, how is he different to a dog just following his own instincts? I just thought, yeah, okay. Wasn't expecting that. And then they built up and showed this image of authentic manhood. And they said that an authentic man doesn't just follow his every whim that he feels. He doesn't just follow anything that he feels automatically. He stops, he thinks about it, and he gauges, is this right? Is this wrong? How does this measure up with Scripture? How does this measure up with Christ? Yes, I've got this urge, but is that urge right? Is that sinful, or is that a God-given urge? And the way they built up that idea and picture of authentic manhood, that it just really became something for me, saying that's actually what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And then they flipped it around and said, okay, well then, what about lust? What about pornography? What about the thoughts that you have, the feelings that you have for other people, you know, people's daughters or wives or any person along the street, you know, what are you doing to those people with your thoughts that Christ would not approve of? And then vice versa, how would you then say, all right, Christ, teach me how to be a man with those thoughts, with those feelings?
Yeah. And I can imagine that was a massively pivotal moment in your life, because as I'm hearing your story and I'm listening to this boy who grew up pretty much without a father in the home and was introduced to pornography at a young age, which by the way, we all know pornography is a terrible mentor when it comes to understanding sex and relationships and faithfulness and all, you know, the sacrifice that's required in a healthy relationship certainly doesn't teach us about authentic manhood, right?
No,
so
sure.
I'm hearing that you reached this pivotal point where you started realizing that God is starting to examine your life through the lens of his word and through the lens of, you know, his son, Jesus. But I'm also hearing that it sounds almost like God was being, if I can put it this way, gentle with you in terms of helping you into that. In other words, he didn't come to you and smash you in the nose as a kid who'd grown up with a lot of missing pieces in terms of being able to understand how to be a man.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And so, you know, we've got a few minutes left, but I would love for you to be able to kind of tell us where things went from there. And then also just any encouraging words that you would have for any other men especially that are out there that maybe have faced some of the things you faced in your history about an absent father, the difficulty of kind of trying to deal with anger that can come up, just any word of encouragement that you would have for them before we let them know where they can get more information about you and your ministry?
Sure. So from there, I started dating a girl who I vowed to the Lord, "Lord, if this doesn't work, that's me done for for relationships for a while." That girl ended up helping me deal with pornography in a relationship. I had to open up quite early on with her, saying, "Hey, this is what I'm dealing with." And I must admit, she took it in a stride. She's been a massive help. She and I dated for 7 years, and then we got married, and we've been married for now 8, and we've got 2 little kids. And I wouldn't look back and regret anything with her. So that's she happens to be my pastor's daughter too.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think in terms of encouragement, anyone who comes from a bit of a fatherless home or hasn't really had any great male role models, the thing I'd say is that the father, he knows. The Lord is watching us, and he does take it. He is gentle with us. He deals with us in a way that is not going to break us. He knew that this me with pornography and not having a father and coming back from the background I came from, it wasn't the thing that needed to leave right then and then. Amazingly, I mean, I a lot of my external things changed. My language changed, the way I spoke changed, my temperament changed before pornography was addressed. My heart had to be open first to his guidance, and he really did that. He worked well to soften me before he hit me with a blow. But he does. Since then, I've seen his hand working in me to show approval, to show that approval that I've been seeking for so long. He has been answering. There have been a number of things in the last few years where I've desired someone to say something, and they have. But I've been able to see that that wasn't them saying it. It was the Lord saying, "Yes, I approve of you, my boy. This is what I'm going to do for you." Mm-hmm. And he does build us up. He does look after us. He does guide us. So my encouragement would be, seek him. He is the everlasting Father. He is all knowing. He is all powerful, but he's all loving. He is gentle, and he wants us to desire him. He wants us to be like him. And he'll do what he can to get us there.
So we're gonna have you back, Brendan, because we want to also be able to share with people how God's called you into ministry. So real briefly, can you share with us what your ministry is, and then how people could get more information about it?
Sure. So Break Free is aimed particularly at trying to raise awareness in South Africa around pornography and its effects. The culture in South Africa most often is that pornography is just something every guy does, without actually knowing what it's doing psychologically, but also because the majority of kids in South Africa are exposed from an early age, and many are exposed from as young as I was, but to much hardcore stuff than what I was exposed to. So the damage being done from such an early age is far higher. So Break Free's main aim is to try and raise awareness to, this is what the problem is. It's actually a massive problem, and it needs to be dealt with. But then to try and use both my background as an IT administrator, as well as some counseling points and tips to go, this is what you can do to get out of pornography. There's things you can do, and it's not just, raise awareness and stop, but there's interventions, technological interventions, there's counseling interventions, but primarily there's the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And what's the website where they could get more info?
Sure. It's www.break-free.co.za.
Okay, and we'll make sure we've got that in our show notes. But Brendan, thanks so much for being willing to share your story with us and with our listeners, and for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And listeners, you know that we're always grateful for having you with us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. So take care.